This is Reimagining Healthcare, a podcast about innovation in the healthcare industry. It's a show for healthcare business owners, for healthcare professionals, for industry investors, and health tech entrepreneurs. On the show, I talk to health tech and healthcare innovators to uncover how they're reimagining and building a world of seamless digital healthcare experiences and how that fits into people's lives. I'm your host, Yanni Sopanos. Today, I'm speaking with Ben Walker, founder of the accounting firm called Inspire CA. Inspire CA is an innovative chartered accounting and business advisory firm who focus on helping business owners get cashed up so they can pull more money, time, and happiness from their business. Ben talks through transcending the boring tag of accounting by reminding his clients that family is number one. He's into dreaming big, making an impact, but always remembering your roots. These core values drive some pretty interesting business performance measures, such as family holidays taken, social impact, and freedom days for business owners in addition to the financial metrics. Whether you're a startup or mature business, whether you're doing okay or feeling business stress, you'll get a lot of insights and tips from this talk as we unpack things to focus on and things to factor into your business strategy to help build a financially sustainable healthcare or health tech business that ultimately delivers quality healthcare outcomes in a systemized and scalable way. Let's jump in. Well, hey there, Ben. How are you doing today? Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, really good. Thanks, Yanni. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. I was very keen to get you on, Ben, because you're not an ordinary chartered accountant by my reckoning. Being a former chartered accountant myself, but also just looking at generally where the industry's at, there's a number of things that really stand out about what you do. So before we get into it, maybe just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background that leads to where you are now with Inspire CA.
Well, I always sort of went towards the numbers side of things when I was in school. So that sort of came easy to me. And I found myself sort of enjoying accounting, if that's easy to believe. But when I left school, I went into this sort of corporate role at one of the big four accounting firms. And that was great from a training perspective. And they did a lot of groundwork with us. But the thing I couldn't quite understand was how the actual model of the accounting world worked. We kept timesheets. We used old crappy software, which took 30 minutes to log in. You know, there was a few things that just didn't make sense to me. Oh, by the way, the client paid for that 30 minutes that we weren't doing anything, which is, you know, another mind-blowing thing. And as the years progressed, you know, learning more and more, I changed to another firm. And I really saw that the power that accounting can have on someone's life. And, you know, how I saw that practically is we'd have meetings with the client. They'd come in stressed. They'd have all this worry about their tax or cash flow or things like that. And I was looking at my boss at the time, and, you know, through an hour, he was able to just work through with the client, calm their nerves, give them strategies. And from my perspective, where I started seeing that fulfillment of how we could really help people. So that's kind of a bit of a background into why I love accounting. And then there was new things coming out like Xero and cloud accounting and, you know, different models of like fixed pricing or, you know, making sure you're not getting charged by the hour for accounting. And I actually just wanted to have a crack at running an accounting firm myself. And so, yeah, I think it was in 2013 I created Inspire CA. And it was kind of an idea at the time that's turned into something pretty cool.
Let's unpack that a little bit. So that Xero era was really pivotal and disruptive for the accounting industry broadly, because prior to that, the overwhelming business model was structured around time and materials in terms of how fees were charged from accountants. When you launched, did you sort of go straight into a subscription type model? Were you sort of thinking like that, combining that with kind of, you know, consulting services, but kind of working out how to actually build a subscription model for the advisory services?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was sort of day one where we threw out the timesheets. We started using Xero from day one. And yeah, I kind of designed the firm from the back of house processes to client meetings and client onboarding from a perspective of how would I want to be treated as a client, but also all of our processes got turned inside out and the client saw everything. You know, I don't want to be sitting there using dirty old systems that, you know, and clients paying for stuff that's not of value to them. And so, you know, even in packaging that product, we've got the product called It's All Sorted, It's in a tax and accounting subscription that aims to pay for itself with tax savings. And, we basically included in that package what a proactive accountant should be doing for their clients. So, yes, it covers things like the tax returns and the BASAs and, dealing with ASIC and the ATO. But we wanted to sort of have scheduled proactive meetings throughout the year. So it wasn't just a once a year thing. We wanted to take our clients through tax planning because we know that that's when we can save a client thousands, if not tens of thousands, and in some case, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in tax. So, every client that works with Inspire, they have to get that. If you don't want it, I'm so happy if you want to use another accounting firm, because it's just like you just can't miss that sort of thing.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because once you spend a dollar, you can't get it back. Sometimes I see with younger business operators, there's that kind of mindset, don't spend money on anything. And, that's a very limiting strategy because we have this agreement in our society that when people do things for each other, that there's an exchange of money. So what we need to elevate our thinking on is to actually understand what value is being provided from the people that we are asking to help us or to do things with us. And so that does require breaking down that idea of, resisting spending money, but actually being more thoughtful around where the money's being spent and what's coming back in return. Do you talk to your clients through those kinds of ideas as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of our, even take our fees, for example, we're definitely not the cheapest, but we're not the most expensive end of the market. But our conversation usually goes through, let's have a look at what you're paying from an accounting perspective, but have they cost you any overpaid tax that you wouldn't have needed to pay? So have you basically paid too much than you had to? And, I remember probably about 18 months ago, we had a client where they were paying about $6,500 a year in accounting fees. But the last financial year we had a look at, and that uncovered close to about $80,000 worth of overpaid taxes that they, didn't have to pay. And when you look at a cost of, $6,500 in accounting fees, that's not small, but it's not huge. But what's the real cost or the true cost of your accountant? If you pay us $8,000 and you're saving, $80,000 in overpaid taxes, then I think we've done a really, really good job there.
Totally. I think that's a great way to actually put that and conceptualize it because it does go towards the value. So, you're spending less than 10% of the gain that you're making is probably another way to actually put it as well. That's where the accountant mindset is key, isn't it? There's a lot of training that goes into thinking that way and actually understanding money, understanding finances, understanding how economic behavior actually works. So it's not all about just lodging paperwork at the end of the quarter and at the end of the financial year for tax purposes, is it? There's a lot more that goes into it.
Well, yeah, it depends on what type of accounting firm you are. Some will just take the numbers from the client, enter it into their system and submit it to the ATO. Good accountants will actually take that, have some thinking outside the box and, just make sure we're doing everything proactively we can. There's multiple different ways to treat transactions in a business from a tax perspective, and we want to be making sure we use the most advantageous for the business owner. And so that's the sort of style we sort of approach things with. And we don't think we've done a great job unless we've saved our clients more money, whether that's in tax savings or saved expenses, increase, and we've cost them in accounting fees. That's not a good day if we haven't done that. And thank goodness it doesn't happen often.
Yeah, I'm totally right. I can remember plenty of times where I've been talking to clients about transitioning into digital health systems, for example, and, they've in part got all of these sort of free systems in place. There was a massive proliferation with tech over the years where, you could just subscribe to all kinds of different software and there was no fee. There was no fee for that software. But then what you have is all this time and motion cost that comes into it where to perform a task, for example, it's actually taking you more time and effort to actually get that job done, as well as also assuming some of the risk with where the data is going and what the data could be doing as well. So they're not cash now. They're not costs in terms of cash terms now, but they're kind of implicit costs in your business because you're paying for people's time. You're paying for people's effort. And if they're doing tasks that you're not paying a subscription for, but you're actually putting, 25% of their time into something that could be done in 5% of the time, well, that's an actual cost. It actually needs to be revealed, and that's where a good analysis and a good advisor actually comes in and says, this is actually the total cost of the way you actually do things.
Yeah, yep, no, absolutely. And, you know, I can even think back, and this would be relevant to sort of health practitioners as well, where, you know, accounting went from paper-based into, you know, online record keeping and that sort of thing. I think there's huge efficiencies to be gained there, and people do their work faster, which means I can see more clients and that side of things. But, yeah, again, sort of backing up your point on the price of a subscription, it isn't just the dollar figure you pay for that. You know, online subscriptions, like let's take Xero, for example. Some people can't get their heads around $50 a month, but oh my goodness, the hours it'll save you using Excel or downloading bank statements and all this sort of stuff. You don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's switch gears a little bit. So in broad terms, I like to talk about modernization of healthcare, and you deal with a number of healthcare clients as well. You also have non-healthcare clients. But in broad terms, some of the key things that you've got an interesting framework for measures of success. I was picking up on some of your communication that, you know, you've got key measures around how many family holidays your clients are having, you know, what sort of social impact is being made, how many freedom days are being achieved, as an example, in addition to things like, you know, reductions in bad debt and saving or freeing up cash flow, your tax savings and profit, which are probably, you know, more cornerstone kind of metrics around accounting. But tell me more about the holiday, the family holidays, the freedom days and the social impact, because I think that really sets you apart, actually, on how you're thinking about the why.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we consider ourselves numbers people, but at the same time, we reckon family is number one. And so we want to keep that in mind when we're looking to work with business owners and even when I approach running Inspire as well. And this has happened throughout my life. I'm definitely not perfect, and I don't think I've got it perfect now. But, you know, we often think that we go into business to provide ourselves or our families the freedom of money and time and all this sort of thing. What often happens is we get into business and it's hard. I feel like you get punched in the face metaphorically. I hope it's limited too, but time after time when you sort of learn, hey, you know, hiring team and all this sort of stuff. And usually as business owners, we'll just pour hours and hours into it, you know, work big days. And often the whole reason why we went into business, which was to give more freedom to our family, is flipped and it ends up working against us. And what we found is, you know, looking at other people who run successful businesses and from a lifestyle perspective as well, we started to notice that, yeah, they take time out of the business. And you know, don't judge me too much on this because it's a great thing to work towards over time. But we want our clients to be taking, you know, 12 weeks off a year, call it 2 to 3 at Christmas, you know, going on school holidays with the kids, things like that, just taking time out of the business. It's a great time for things to pop up and you realize systems that you need in place or, you know, what goes wrong when you walk out the door. And often if you address that when you return with refreshed mind and refreshed energy, then you're actually making your business better in the process as well. That's from a sort of time and family perspective, but let's take the money side of things as well. You know, what we sort of notice business owners is you tend to put every dollar straight back into the business. You might take money out to put food on the table, but you basically put all your eggs in one basket from a wealth creation perspective. Where your biggest asset, you know, might be your house, but also you think it's your business, which, you know, is also a relatively big risk if you're banking on that in the long term. So we encourage our clients to, you know, take some profit out of their business and make sure they're investing that wisely over the time that they're running the business so that they've also got a nest egg that they're building up. Yes, there's superannuation, but there's also investments outside of super that you need to sort of consider and to make sure that you're not just all doing it for nothing.
Yeah, I think that's the difference between business or busyness. You know, there are a lot of people who are just busy and they're not necessarily really getting anywhere. If anything, you know, they may actually even be better off just taking a job somewhere when you factor in all the cost and some of the risk that they're taking on. So I think you know, having the right mindset around why the business is in place, what the goals are for every hat that you wear. So, you know, you're you might be one of the key employees in the business, but you also are an owner of the business. So they're two different mindsets. As an owner, you have a certain set of goals. As an employee in the business, you have another set of goals. I think that gets embellished a lot. You know, people kind of aren't taught to think that way. And I think that's why it's important to have that commercial advice, you know, where somebody's looking at it from the outside in rather than you know, from the inside out.
And I think often business owners are a bit too hard on themselves, or, you know, potentially don't pay themselves first. And the thing that can kind of hurt if you're in a bit of a tough spot is, you know, looking at your own role in the business and how many hours you're committing, what you're getting paid, all this sort of stuff. And just thinking, if you were working for someone else, would you be happy with what you were sort of taking out, or how you're treating yourself? So that's something that you need to sort of keep in mind and make sure that you're getting what you essentially deserve out of the business.
That's another thing I've kind of observed over the years in business, is that Australia is an amazing place. You know, it's a great country. It puts a lot of effort into rights and equality and, you know, getting everything right for the people. But I feel as though the business owner doesn't get really a lot. There seems to be, you know, I mean, an employee has the annual leave, has the superannuation guarantee, has the personal leave, has the compassionate leave, has the, you know, volunteering at the fire brigade leave, and so on and so forth. There's an incredible amount of support for the concept of an employee. But to your point, nobody really asks the business owner, have you had leave? You know, are you getting paid a minimum return, you know, a minimum wage or a minimum level of income? So the business owner carries all of this risk. And yet for some reason in Australia, we tend to look at business owners as somehow being in this privileged position. And yet it's quite the opposite, isn't it? Because there's a lot of risk in business in Australia in particular.
Huge. Yep, that's right. And I think often, you know, the people who are doing well and essentially judged for that, they haven't been observed through the really tough times. And I've never met anyone who's anywhere near what I would consider successful that hasn't actually been through some really tough times, like whether it's close to bankruptcy or tough business or you know, times when teams walked out or all this sort of thing. So, yeah, I think you've got to look at the whole journey.
Absolutely. Why don't we sort of start at the beginning, you know, when somebody's thinking about setting up either a new health practice or a new health tech venture, what should they be thinking about, Ben?
When you're starting a business, some of the things to consider are your business structure. So a lot of people kind of go to the easiest way, which is to sort of become a sole trader. But at Inspire, we think that's a pretty risky business. Some things you need to consider is maybe look at trusts or companies and how from day one you can get a bit of a corporate structure set up behind you. Now, there's a couple of benefits of that. Usually they're way more flexible from a tax perspective, and they'll end up saving you more tax than the structure costs you in setup fees and accounting fees. But the other big thing as well is they put a layer of defense in place from an asset protection perspective, so that, you know, if you're a sole trader and you know, let's say something bad happens in the business and you end up getting sued, they're not suing you personally, and any assets that you own, like, you know, let's say the home, the family home, aren't being brought into this sort of legal battle. It sort of sits aside as a separate entity in a company of trust that's structured well, and you get that layer of asset protection, which is great. So that's kind of like the foundational part. You obviously need to think of accounting records and a system behind that, like, for instance, Xero. We like them at Inspire, you know, to sort of have that layer of bookkeeping and financial record keep. That's sort of a couple of things to consider from that perspective.
I think I have the answer for this, but and just to get your sense of it. So when should somebody be thinking about their own personal asset protections when they're starting a business?
Yeah, so that'd be definitely in that structuring part. And like, the twofold, you've got to consider when you've got a director of the business, or the person running the business, we don't actually like them holding any personal assets in their own name, because the, you know, let's say the business is sued and they're successful in ending up suing the person personally, we don't want to have the family home lost or any other investments in their own name. That can all be structured through a spouse's name, as an example, or in company or trusts that are set up well for the family. And kind of the second part of that is also making sure your estate planning incorporates all that sort of thing. Estate planning is more than just a will. You need to consider what happens with company assets, trust assets, what happens with your super. And in terms of a good time to have all that in place, that's absolutely, you should have that in place before you go into business. And you need to check it that it still makes sense as you start setting up all the structures in running of the business as well. It's quite complex stuff, you need to be working with an accountant who understands. They don't need to do the actual estate planning themselves, but they definitely need to understand and work in with the lawyers on how it all works.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think the sooner the better. If you're planning a business, you want to try and get that personal risk understood and put action plans in place, because you've got these other dynamics in the legal regulatory framework as well, where even if you do change something that was in your name, depending mm-hmm. on what you're doing and how you're doing it, there may be clawback provisions that relate yep. to those changes. So, you know, the sooner you get those things done, the easier it is to transcend the clawback timeframes in the event that the business didn't go well over the next 3, 4, 5 years, for example, where, you know, a liquidator or an administrator could actually reach back and grab some of those assets in some way.
Yeah, that's right. We say to clients that there's a 4.5-year timer that starts for any related party transactions. So, let's say you go and move your half of the house into your spouse's name, and you know, that could easily be unwound for up to 4.5 years. When we sort of meet with clients for the first time and we sort of educate them through some of this stuff, and they start to freak out with, look, you know, you're in a very normal situation. A lot of people don't have this knowledge, but we want to keep this in mind for future purchases. You know, if you sell your house, let's buy it in the right name moving forward, and any other investments that you've got. You know, we had a client a couple of years ago who moved his half of the house into his wife's name. It cost him $12,000 in stamp duty, but he wanted that protection. You know, it was worth more to him. It's almost like an insurance policy that the $12,000 in stamp duty was that insurance policy that he wanted, knowing that if anything went bad, that his $500,000 share of that house is protected.
That's kind of the whole point, isn't it? Is to get informed. And that way you can look at the costs and benefits of making a decision one way or the other. And so getting that expert advice, not just at the start, but also during the evolution of the business, because the business will grow, right? It'll go from, the first owner-operator to the first staff member to potentially partnership to potentially, you know, taking on very large clients and, you know, having more complex agreements to be bound by and to work with. There's a lot of evolution that happens through the life of a business. So it's good to actually have somebody who's looking at it from the outside in consistently through the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And at each one of those points you mentioned, there's all sorts of things to consider. Changes to your structure or adding on to your structure, that's all completely normal in a sense. But as the business owner, you definitely need to be working with someone who can guide you through things to think about at each step.
I guess there's the other dynamic as well, is that, you know, government changes gears on occasions and, changes laws, and sometimes they're retroactive and other times they're from a given date and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of moving targets. Business is getting tougher and tougher in some ways. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of moving parts. You know, you've got privacy to think about. You've got employment law to think about, workplace health and safety. You've got indemnities, to think through. Each of these sort of legislative type of frameworks, they're also iterating as well. They're making changes based on, case law, common law type precedents, petition for changes and so on and so forth. It's kind of just thinking about what you've been going through with the stimulus programs that have been coming out from government to support businesses affected through COVID-19. That's more an acute change in the environment. There'd be a lot of value for businesses in having somebody who really understands those things and is able to translate them very quickly to give effect to whatever the benefit is or whatever the support is.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's take the tax laws, for example. They change quite often. You know, we usually get annual changes with the federal budget that's announced in May. But then, COVID-19 is an example where, we're hearing announcements on the TV on a Sunday afternoon, and we need to advise clients Monday morning on this stuff means. And, that's definitely a challenge. But, so there's sort of a couple of examples. But, even with trusts and companies, they've been changing the company tax rate, for the last 7 or 8 years, what seems. And also changes with trusts. The rules have tightened up a lot when it comes to, family trusts or discretionary trusts. You need to make sure that you're doing the right things each year when it comes to distributions and just making sure that it's by the book, because I think there's a few ticking time bombs that exist for trusts in general that we need to make sure the paperwork sitting behind it is spot on.
That's really good high-level guidance there for people to actually look into that in more detail, because a lot of those changes tend to happen in the background and they come up to bite you when you least expect it. Yeah, it's another layer of that precarious side of being in business where, you know, you got a few balls in the air constantly that you're trying to juggle. Getting the right support, the right advice through the whole experience is, I think, absolutely key in this day and age. Even if you haven't done it through the startup, there's always no time like the present to actually review things and go through it.
Absolutely.
We tend to lean a lot more in business around sales and marketing, don't we, as opposed to thinking about defense. You know, it's more offense. You know, it's what are we going to do to grow the business and push forward? Mm. But that defensive side is pretty key as well. Should a business owner be biased one way or the other, or perhaps be a little bit more balanced? You know, what would you be recommending for clients to be thinking about?
Yeah, I think it's great to keep an eye on both. I don't think any business has been successful, you know, cutting expenses and, you know, working their way out of a hole through cutting expenses. Like, I think that's a little bit limited, but then I've seen, you know, business owners be the total opposite. You know, let's spend as much as we can on sales and marketing and we'll grow out of it. But, you know, what I've even experienced myself and what I see time and time is that, you know, growth for the sake of growth is cancer. And so often it can actually be detrimental to the business and we can sort of get this unsustainable growth where, you know, we're spending $10,000, $20,000 a month on marketing and sales and it might not be returning or returning enough. But then we've got other problems that pop up, like dealing with capacity and having to hire people, and we end up chasing our tails. So, you know, my personal perspective is you need to set targets in your business that are sustainable. Yes, you can have these big campaigns throughout the year, but, you know, how many clients or you know, people do you need to see, or the team need to see each week to make it super sustainable and that you can grow? That's pretty important. And the other thing as well that I find interesting is from an expense trimming exercise, I think it's actually something that you need to do at least 3 months, every 3 months for your business. You know, often we'll sign up for something or, you know, another subscription to something. And what we'll find is that we can review our expenses and there's at least, you know, it depends on the business, but there's at least a couple of hundred, if not a couple of grand per month that you could trim back in unnecessary expenses or expenses that maybe aren't returning that value to you. Let's say you saved $2,000 a month if you did this for the first time and you found $2,000 per month in expenses that you could trim back on, then that's 24 grand a year. That's, you know, relatively huge to add on top of your profit. So I even find every time I do it, I'm like, wow, I didn't expect to find that much. And it's just sort of, you know, running out of your pocket. Unfortunately.
In behavioral science and behavioral economics, there is a principle that has been found through some of the social science that once people make a purchase decision on subscriptions, they tend to not revisit it, you know, at all. And so, you know, we're living in a modern economy where everything is subscribable pretty much. I mean, there's exceptions, of course, now, but on the main, there was this concept that sort of came out with the rise of the Silicon Valley and all of this proliferation of tech innovation. There was a lot of analysis done on buying behavior in the context of technology. There was a time when you couldn't get software for a fee per month. You know, you had to pay a very large amount of dollars up front and then more dollars every year in maintaining and managing it and then having the professional services that came with it. So there was a lot of barriers perceived to actually getting access to the benefits of technology. So the concept of subscription economy started to emerge going back probably a good 10 years ago now. And there was a lot of science that was backing that up. And they were starting to discover that when people made decisions to subscribe to something, that they wouldn't revisit that purchase decision, as compared to if you had to make that purchase decision every single time. So let's say every month you had to decide whether you're going to spend that $150. You're actually making a purchase decision many, many times, as compared to just choosing to pay $50 per month right from the outset. And then you make that decision and move on. It's important to understand that a little bit more about ourselves as human beings, that you know, ultimately we have to kind of revisit. As we change, we might have actually overapped. We might have put too many systems in place because they sounded like a good idea at the time. We either haven't fully internalized them, like we haven't built our culture around them, or we're sort of underutilizing, you know, the app. We're not really getting the full value. Or perhaps there's another app in the system that is actually doing the same thing as that other app. You know, we tend to, you know, repeat it. It's a bit like buying a coffee. If you really enjoy buying coffee, you're going to go to different coffee makers throughout the day and have coffees. But I think software, in a way, tends to be that way. We kind of are attracted to the same functionality, but just in different products. So we can overapp quite a bit in that as well. Anyway, look, that's just a perspective on software, but there'd be other expenses in the P&L, wouldn't there? That would be bigger ticket items as well. What are kind of some usual suspects, you know, to be mindful of when you look at that kind of, you know, cost revision? You know, do we really need to be spending this?
Well, that could be things definitely like software, or another one is if you've got team members, just make sure you're paying for the right amount of seats or licenses for that software. That's another tricky one, especially when people leave. Some people don't afford, and including myself, I've found that. So that's one to be mindful of. One that that's going to hurt culture, though, if you try to sort of trim the fat on that one, is your team members. You don't want to be necessarily just gung-ho about firing people or reducing people's hours. That's not going to bode well, not only for that person, but I think that sends the wrong energy around the business. So that's kind of the last thing I'd visit. You know, I'll even put it on the table. You know, look at your accounting fees. Are you actually getting value from it? All your advisors, business coaching, I can see sometimes on P&Ls is $20,000, $30,000. You know, make sure you're getting the value out of it. I think that's so important.
What's a good yardstick, Ben? So when it comes to coaching and mentoring, because that's quite common with a significant percentage of the healthcare market. There's a lot of professional development that goes on. What should you expect to get back on, say, that 20K spend? You know, what is it, 2-to-1, 3-to-1? Is it measured in a different way?
Great question. And I definitely think this is, so relevant to the actual type of coaching in your business. But I would personally be wanting to see something like a 10-to-1 ROI on sort of coaching like that. You know, here's some perspective. You know, some coaches are awesome. This is like any industry, there's a lot of sharks out there as well. But there's some coaches and I've heard some feedback that without that coach there would be no business. To a degree, you can't really put a price on that. So, I wouldn't be silly with how you calculate your 10-to-1 ratio, but I definitely think they'd be earning their money charging that sort of figure. Yeah, so that's my perspective on it.
Because that's that could be quite a big line item when you think about it. When you look at your P&L, if you ranked it by the highest expenditure down to the lowest expenditure, that might be another way to actually look at the big ticket items and see whether you can be more efficient in some of those areas. But more often than not, it's going to be people in your business, right? That's probably going to be the biggest expense line item.
Yeah, that's right. I said sort of leave that to last, but at the same time, you know, if you've got an underperformer in the business or someone who's just causing trouble, then as a leader in the business, you have to deal with that. Otherwise, that's going to just become part of your culture. So, if you need to do some rejigging of team, then I'm not saying don't do it. You know, absolutely do that, because then you need to look after your business first rather than, you know, any single team member who's behaving badly.
Yeah. I think another thing that comes to mind as well is just getting that cash flow dynamic figured out so that you're actually staying ahead of the cash expenditure that's coming out of the business, particularly when it comes to things like compliance cycles. Like you've got your BAS, you've got your superannuation, PAYG withholding, for example. They're things that I hear from time to time, you know, small business owners who they don't plan ahead. They're kind of flying by the seat of their pants, and, you know, the lodgement comes up and, you know, the debt is due and we'll figure it out, you know, based on this month's turnover or next month's turnover. That's not a good way to be, is it?
No. And from a cash flow management perspective, you know, a lot of our clients say that they're not numbers people and you know, they don't do well with, you know, all the dollars. And what's human nature is our tendency to spend everything that's in the account. And so when you get these quarterly tax bills or annual tax bills and things like that, they can often catch you off guard if you haven't got systems set up in place. You know, one of the things we advocate for is setting up a system where you've got multiple different bank accounts throughout the month, or you even got this set up on direct debit, that you've got a certain amount going out each week or each month into these savings accounts for the purpose of tax, or, you know, for the purpose of a rainy day fund. You know, we've got clients who, you know, got to the start of this COVID-19 thing. They rang us so grateful saying, hey, thank you for a year ago telling me to set up that bank account. And, you know, I've got 50 grand sitting there for this rainy day and the rainy day. And, you know, that's the difference between, you know, a happy client who's able to survive this easily versus someone who hasn't got that cash buffer there. And, you know, we're almost in damage control trying to work out how they get through the next few months. And so, yeah, I think there's some practical things you can do. You know, again, paying yourself first, don't pay yourself last. That sends the wrong signal to yourself. You've got your own family to provide for, but you've also got the families of the team members, and you can't do that without putting the oxygen on yourself first. And so you need to make sure you're looked after. If you're listening to this and you are sort of running the business week to week when it comes to cash, it can be hard thinking about having 50 grand in an account just sitting there, or, you know, paying your BAS in full. Like, it's a difficult concept, but just start with, you know, 100 bucks a week going into an account, or 1,000 if you can afford it. But just start that behavior and then dial up that slowly and slowly. And you kind of won't notice it over time when you increase the cash flow going into those savings accounts.
What I like to kind of lift out here is that in the context of healthcare is, you know, looking after the health outcomes of people, but then it's inevitably also a business, because you just cannot do anything in Australia without it having some sort of economic relevance, unless you're in a black market or something, I guess. But even that's got its own economy, hasn't it? But, yeah, it's a business. It's a business. And so, you know, when you look at the opportunity with digital health innovations these days, there's so many ways to actually implement systems and automations and cultural transformation that actually scale the business better than just being a totally manual business, or, you know, kind of just leaving the admin till, you know, the last minute. I think there's a really strong connection, and it's part of the reason why I wanted to get you on, Ben. It's a really strong connection between how we modernize healthcare, but how we actually run the business of healthcare better. Do you have any guidance or suggestions based on some of the experience that you have with healthcare customers around how they could actually use a chartered accountant, so to speak, to actually help grow the business of healthcare?
Yeah. From an advisor perspective, you know, the feedback an accountant could give you is, you know, having a look at the key numbers in your business and having a look at, let's say, from a sales perspective, what you need to hit every week in sales to just pay the bills and that's it. We call that almost like we have like a traffic light system of our sales targets internally, but we also share this strategy with our clients. What's sort of the bare minimum you need to provide for the business? And then what's our orange level target and our green target? Sort of maybe that's driven by what you could turn over from a capacity perspective, or what a great target would be to have a decent profit at the end of the month. And a good accountant would be able to help you work that out. So that's not like a huge, you know, one day planning session or anything like that. That can be done within a couple of hours with the client usually. That kind of gives you some numbers to focus on, and you can also get your team involved in helping you achieve those targets. Other ways we can help is on a practical level with that cash flow planning. So, you know, making sure your bank accounts are set up properly and you know how much to put away into those accounts each month, so that you know you can pay your tax bills in full. That's a huge game changer for our clients, which is cool. Even from an organization piece, we've actually got a few that use Core Plus, and I know that their systems are a lot better than people who are just stuck in paper. You compare that to an accounting firm who's just bogged down in paper files and that sort of thing, versus, you know, the extent of my tools are the MacBook Pro sitting on my desk. Like, everything is online for us now, and there's massive efficiencies that come with that. Even over the last sort of 3 to 4 months, I've been going through our business and working out how can we just to even improve on our processes, you know, reviewing the software that we're using to help. And even right from the start of Inspire, I found that, you know, through automation and through software that's available to us, we can almost save a full-time administration person with the help that can give you, Things like Zapier, depending on how you call it, can connect all your software together. And you can repurpose that admin team member for something that's much higher level and you know, practice management, that side of things, which is kind of cool. So, they're kind of a bit of an oversight in how a good accountant or a good advisor can sort of share that sort of second opinion on your business.
I'm a strong believer that we have to always look at what's burning our activity. You know, if something's burning a lot of our time, then it's ultimately that's the highest cost. And so if we can use systems to actually do streamlined workflows and automations, then that gives us more cash to be able to invest in delivering better outcomes in terms of healthcare. And it's kind of as you were talking about that, I was thinking about what most health practitioners are trying to achieve, which is basically gaining adherence and commitment from their clients towards the goals that they're looking for. So in a way, that's exactly what you're saying as well. It's just you're kind of the business health advisor, so to speak, whilst they're the actual person health advisor in that context. So everyone's got goals, and if we've got to stick to that, we've got to find ways to actually engage with that over a long period of time so that the business is as healthy as possible. And if the business is healthy, then their healthcare is going to be the best it can be, you know, for the clients that it serves as well. So, Ben, thank you very much for taking the time out today and giving us some of your advice and guidance. I know accountants always cringe at the word advice, so I'll probably rephrase that, but thanks for your insights. And, you know, there's always the qualification, oh, well, I'm not really giving advice right now, but, you know, subject to this. But you've been great at actually sharing generously some of your insights. And we're going to have some links to Inspire CA. We're going to encourage our listeners to take a look at your website and connect with you because you're a very impressive marketer and communicator online. You've got a book there about how to manage cash flow. Got a great blog site going on. You do some podcasting and media yourself, which I think people should be listening to. So it's a real honor and a privilege, Ben. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks so much again for having me on, Yoni. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is produced in collaboration with HealthTechX, where we are working toward a world of integrated digital health empowerment for all people. If you'd like more info on how to get involved, head over to the website healthtechx.com.au. Or if you have any feedback about the show, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn, Instagram, or email by following the links in this episode's show notes. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to Reimagining Healthcare in your podcast app. And if you like what you heard, leave us a 5-star review. It really helps other people find the show. I'm your host, Yoni Sopanos. And I'll speak to you in our next episode.